Deezer Originals.
This is Defending in Numbers.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy New Year and welcome to Defending in Numbers, the podcast where we walk down the corridor of uncertainty, pretending to know a little bit more about football than we actually do. My name is Rob Armstrong and I know nothing about football. Absolutely nothing. But I tell you a man who does, a man on my right and just in both of your ears, it's Nick English, making his debut on the show. How are you, Nick?
I'm very, very well. Rob, how are you?
I'm splendid. I'm about, I'd say I'm roughly 9 pounds heavier than I was on the last show.
9 pounds?
Yeah.
What's that in kilo? I went metric years ago.
Oh.
Which is making me nervous with
you're
Brexit.
You're so trendy. Yeah, he does have a Dutch wife. kilo, I don't know. What's that, 2 kilos?
It's about a stone, isn't it?
It's about a stone.
Like, no, stone's
14 pounds. Yeah, 14. There you go.
I'm just thinking I put on a stone over Christmas, so therefore, so good for him.
Bringing the imperial metric debate into the 21st century, defending in numbers. That's what it's all about. Nothing to do with football. And on the right of Nick, who's on my right, and then that means he's on my left because we sit in a triangle.
Yeah.
God, defending in shapes. It's the big dog in the yard, Adam Boltwood. How are you, Adam?
Very good. It's a pleasure to be back, Rob. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks.
Of course, this is, as I've said 9 million times already, defending in numbers. You're listening on Deezer, where you can also find loads more great podcasts, Premier League commentary and football playlists. So download the app or visit www.deezer.com. You don't want to visit deezer.com unless, of course, you're going to the Russian World Cup.
Yeah.
Is that the website for Deezer?
Probably.
while we all book our visas for summer, we go into the first section, week by numbers.
The week by numbers.
Smooth first transition of 2018.
Started it out.
Let's talk about Virgil van Dijk and the number £75 million. The world record fee for a defender, overtaking your Mendes, overtaking your Carl Walkers, overtaking probably your Thomas Repkes.
Wow.
Filling that hole in the Liverpool defence that's been there for about 10 years now or something. people are saying, is it value? Is he going to make a difference there? Or is it just a horrifically overpriced signing in the Premier League? But what I'll come to you.
It's hard to say. I think on paper he's got all the attributes. He's strong, he's assured, he's composed. And obviously that's something Liverpool have been lacking in defence. He's not made a single error leading to a goal in his Premier League career so far, which you can't say the same for Lovren and Matip and Klavan either. They all made mistakes leading to goals last season.
Are you lying to me? Isn't there that video of him getting nutmegged by Harry Kane?
I'm just saying according to Opta, an actual mistake that's led to a goal. I'm just doing my stats based on the perfect source there. But yeah, I think he is a very good defender. I just wonder if he's going to solve all of the issues. I mean, Simon Mignolet's still in goal for Liverpool. You know, there's certain inexperience in the fullback positions, which could lead to errors themselves. And Klopp's system with the high pressing, you know, the high defensive line as well, it does expose the centre-backs. So it'd be interesting to see how Van Dijk copes in that system. But I don't think anyone can argue that it's overpriced. They should have got him 6 months ago in the summer. If they'd have handled that whole situation better then, they probably would have got him for cheaper as well. So you've got to question the transfer management, I'd say.
Yeah, Nick, it was a pretty rubbish piece of tapping up, wasn't it?
It was the worst tapping up ever. And the hypocrisy of Liverpool fans crying about Coutinho and the admittedly very annoying Barcelona approach to transfers. I'm an Arsenal fan, so I know that it triggers me every time I see Xavi give an interview saying that X and X player is a legend. I'm just like, you know what you're doing, Xavi. Don't do that. I think it's a really interesting move because Liverpool have basically committed to Klopp here because they've bought Naby Keita, who'll be joining next season. They've bought Virgil van Dijk. And it very much looks like piece by piece, they're starting to assemble a really, really good team. They're building for the future here. They've got one of the youngest squads in the league, third youngest squad in the league. Their 21 to 25 year old sort of block of players get more minutes than any other block in the squad. So they're playing a lot of young players who have quite a lot of experience, actually. Virgil van Dijk is sort of a perfect Klopp defender. He's everything that kind of Klopp wanted from Sacco, but without the attitude. And also, he's ridiculously fresh. Van Dijk has barely played any football. He was injured tail end of last season. He's just not been at the races this season at all. He's barely kicked a kicked a ball properly all season.
That's how you increase your value.
That's how you increase your value. So it's obvious the deal was done in the summer, but Southampton said, look, can we hold on to him for 6 months or something like that? I don't know what exactly happened, but I think this is a really good move by Liverpool. And the 75 million, that's just where the market is. Mm. You know, Liverpool have had money to spend for quite a while. They're probably going to get 130 million plus for Coutinho.
It's almost like there's more coming in from somewhere.
Oh, strange, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, of the top of the big six, the now big six, only Spurs have a lower net spend over the past few years of about 2 million, but Spurs are trying to fund a stadium. So Liverpool have a bit of money to spend here, and they've been saving it for the right occasion. Naby Keita and Virgil van Dijk is pretty much as good as you can get for a club like Liverpool in the situation that they're in.
Now, I'm just going to throw something out there, right? 75 million quid. Would that not be better spent on good scouts that don't just go to Southampton games?
Yeah.
A 30 million pound goalkeeper that isn't Simon Mignolet and a 45 million pound centre back, which I imagine if you do a decent bit of scouting, a bit of fishing about,
yeah,
put your rod in some waters that aren't just on the South Coast.
Yeah.
You must be able to find a good centre back.
Yeah, you would suggest
for 45 million quid.
I think Nick's right in that is where the market's at. But I think, as you say, there's no reason why. I'm surprised that at least there weren't these options considered or found by the scouting department. I mean, you look at someone like, say, Davinson Sanchez, who signed for Spurs this summer, 40-odd million, which is obviously a lot of money in itself. But he's only 21, I think, maybe even younger than that. He's someone who's going to, you know, be at the top level for many years. Does that represent better value than Van Dijk? Probably. And as you say, could they have spent that extra 30 million they would have had if they found someone like Sanchez on the goalkeeper? I think that would have been more shrewd transfer dealing. But at the same time, as Nick says, it's a very strong signing at this point in the season in January, as Liverpool push for a consecutive top four finish.
Guardiola wanted Van Dijk.
Mm.
And as a proposition, Man City are pretty enticing to go to as a player right now. Davinson Sanchez has been probably Spurs' best defender this season. He's been absolutely brilliant, but that was a bit of a punt. It was quite an expensive punt. 37 million their transfer record. Nobody would have been surprised if it had taken him a year to settle in. He's just happened to settle in quite quickly. That's just where the market is. Van Dijk's much more established than Davinson Sanchez was.
Mm.
All right, well, talking about defences, leaky defences, and teams in need of a decent defender, let's move on to Stoke and their goal difference of -24, which is the worst in the division. And Mark Hughes basically appears to win. You know how every manager has the game to save his job?
Yeah.
He'll win that and then lose the next four.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the wave he's been riding up in Staffordshire for the last year or so. I think he's...
There's
must
no
be.
Waves in Staffordshire.
the metaphorical waves, yeah.
Yeah. He must be a dead man walking now, right?
It's hard to see. It's difficult. I think, as you sort of said there, they're in this like weird like Premier League purgatory where they finished 9 free seasons in a row. They finished 13th last year in his fourth season in charge. It certainly doesn't seem to be taking them forward when you look at that. But, you know, obviously we're talking about all the defensive stats here. They've conceded the most goals in Europe's top five leagues, 47. They've got the joint third worst goal difference in Europe's top five leagues at -24. And 6 points from 11 away games. They're joint fewest with West Brom and Crystal Palace. I think it's hard to see Mark Hughes not going now. But at the same time, you know, we spoke a few weeks ago when I was on the podcast about the managerial merry-go-round, you know, the likes of Hodgson and Allardyce. Okay, they're not the most inspiring appointments, but they can be effective. At this point now, all those names have gone to other clubs. And what option does Stoke have, really? If they do sack Hughes, who can they bring in? The likes of Mancini, Ronald Koeman, Steve McLaren have been linked to the job, but are they really going to be the men to sort out this defence?
Slaven Bilic.
Yeah, big Slaven. Is Slaven Bilic going to be the man to sort out Stoke's league defence? Probably.
Well,
not.
He did wonders at West Ham.
They're in the bottom three now, but they're only 5 points behind Watford, who are in 10th. So at the bottom of the table, things are quite tight, so all is not lost for Stoke.
Mm.
But do they stick? Do they twist? It's hard to say.
One thing that before the season started, I was predicting Stoke to go down. I thought they were wild chat to go down. And then when the season started and they played quite well, I was like, oh, I've made a massive mistake here. I wish I'd stuck to my guns here. There's two things about Hughes which I think would really worry me if I was a Stoke fan, is that he buys really badly. He buys really, really badly. He's bought volatile players, kind of in his own image. Real like troublemakers, inconsistent players that don't really fit into the squad. He doesn't really buy like appeasing players like Tony Pulis did, guys who want to get on board and do the job. And also, he really doesn't improve players. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think of some of the players that he's bought, I mean, his in terms of most expensive, Imbula, Vimmer, Shaqiri, even Allen and Berahino, they haven't stepped up at all since he's purchased them. And these are players that, especially someone like Berahino, you'd expect someone like Mark Hughes to really improve him as a striker, kind of go, look, settle down. You know, you had a terrible time at West Brom, but let's just focus on you getting goals. He hasn't improved any of them. And if I'm a Stoke fan, I'm thinking, this, all the players are getting worse. And the decline of Ryan Shawcross under Mark Hughes is probably the least spoken about story in Premier League.
Yeah. Destined for such great things with those twinkle toes, wasn't he?
I mean, you know, Ryan Shawcross was one of the most effective defenders in the league under Tony Pulis. He's absolute shadow of his former self now. And if I was a Stoke fan, I'd be saying, you know, the guy's got to go. You need someone effective in the short term, which might be Bilic, who's got a great short-term record in terms of like his first 6 months at every club.
Mm. If only Guardiola had had Shawcross, it'd be like Sterling this season.
No doubt. There's no doubt.
He'd just do that thing where he tells him to stand sideways instead of front on.
He does the same thing every play.
That's all it is. Yeah. Honestly, lads, I've completed football. It's fine. Let's move on to the next number. That's number seven. That's out of the 24 players used by Man United so far, seven were signed by Jose Mourinho, more than any other previous Man United manager. So Louis van Gaal had six, Alex Ferguson had five. There were four academy graduates and then two from old Moisiola.
Who are the two from Moise? Fellaini and...
Young? No.
Young's been there for
Fellaini
absolutely years.
And
Ferguson by...
Herrera? Little teaser for everyone at home.
It might be Herrera.
No, Mata. Didn't Mata go for 38 million?
Yeah, Mata was right.
Yes.
Knowledge.
Basic research. So those
I should have looked into that before I just asked the question. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud.
Those seven Mourinho players: Eric Bailly, Victor Lindelof, Matic, Pogba, Mkhitaryan, Lukaku, Ibrahimovic. Basically, Man United coming under a lot of flack. And the best players this year are almost, it seems like, the ones that have been there before. Pogba, obviously. Sometimes he looks like he's worth his value and then sometimes he doesn't. I guess that depends on his match fitness. But they're being rescued this season by Ashley Young and Jesse Lingard.
Messi Lingard. As Manchester United fans are calling him,
I mean, he's been absolutely ridiculous. I mean, Jesse Lingard is a classic example of that sort of player that's sort of a 6 out of 10 so often and then just jumps up suddenly. And everyone's like, what the hell's going on here? Ferguson actually predicted it. He said that... Come 24 years old, this guy might be a real, real player. I mean, Mourinho's been unlucky in terms of the players he's brought in. Eric Bailly's been injured. He's been absolutely quality. Mm. Victor Lindelof looks terrified all the time. Nemanja Matic started really well and has obviously gotten tired while Pogba got injured. Pogba got injured, and I think if Pogba has one weakness, it seems it takes him ages to get match fit again. He seems to need at least 3 or 4 games to get back to his level. I mean, in the second half the other day, he was absolutely ridiculous against Everton. He was taking the piss out there at times. Mkhitaryan, who knows? Lukaku gone off the boil. Ibrahimovic injured. And I think this speaks to a wider point, and one that, you know, I don't agree with Gary Neville on his rant about you've got to back Mourinho. United and City have spent virtually the same colossal amount of money over the past few years, just that City are willing to work with more people than just Jorge Mendes. Like Lindelof, there's no way Guardiola's buying Victor Lindelof, but obviously he's playing in Portugal, he's got ties with Jorge Mendes and that sort of that network of Portuguese super agents, so Mourinho's going there. The reason Mourinho wants more money, you know, in the January transfer market is to sort of cover up the fact that he spent way too much on players that have just been nudged towards him by mates of his in the football industry. Guardiola and City are not making the same mistakes. He's got Chicky Beristan in charge as director of football. Hence, they've made much better transfer deals. Sane, Gabriel Jesus, even John Stones looks good value now if you look at Virgil van Dijk at 75 million. Just widen your horizons a bit and don't play into the game so much.
So, Mourinho is... I'm looking at these seven players, and other than Mkhitaryan, they're all giants as well.
They are massive. He loves his players over 6 foot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Is that his transfer strategy? He just buys them if they're over 6 foot, apparently. But I think
we're getting a transfer, mate.
Yeah, there you go. I could sign. We could sign.
Yeah, a 6 foot midget like me is getting nowhere.
Come on, mate.
I'll go and get told to stand sideways at Pep's cafe.
it's funny that I think, you know, Nick's 100% right there in that, you know, we talked about the transfer strategy and the issues maybe Liverpool have had there, or the criticisms we could level at them. You know, for Manchester United, as Nick says, they're basically putting all their faith in these scouts to define their transfer policy, whereas Manchester City have had a much more coherent strategy over a number of years, bringing in the players that Nick mentions there before Guardiola came. And again, it does make you question Manchester United's overall strategy as a club over the number of years, where they're actually going, because it all does seem very short term at the moment. But as for Mourinho, I mean, it's hard to feel sorry for him. He doesn't make it easy to love him. He came out again a few weeks ago and was, as Nick says, complaining about the resources he had, you know, with his tiny violin. He's picking fights with players, ex-players, all this sort of stuff. So, you know, it's hard to feel too sorry for Mourinho, and doesn't make it easy to like him, unfortunately.
Very good with Scholes, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, also, like, everyone seems to say, oh, Paul Scholes is too critical. It's literally his job. If you're a pundit,
they have to do that. I don't understand why.
And Paul Scholes just has very high standards. So if you're going to impress him, you've got to impress him. And he was totally right about Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba was off the boil since coming back from injury, but I'm convinced it's just a match fitness thing. And Scholes doesn't really appreciate that because he thinks all modern players are soft. Just on a wider point on Mourinho, he's averaging 2.14 points per game this season, which is about on par with his career average of 2.2. So we're about in Mourinho's zone. He's peaked at about 2.5 when he was 2004-2005 with Chelsea. So we're about par. It's just that City is so ridiculous this year that he's looking average.
Everyone's having a meltdown, basically, aren't they? Because what can you do?
I mean,
it doesn't look like he enjoys football.
No,
anymore.
I mean, it's frustrating when Mourinho just seems to blame everyone apart from himself. Mm. And I think as time goes on, the tactics he employs in that sense become more transparent and more annoying, basically. But yeah, I mean, this is like Mourinho's third season syndrome in the second season again. Mm. So it's probably only going to end one way within the next season or so, and that's with Mourinho moving on.
Do you think he just sits there and watches Good Will Hunting all night? Let's see where it's not your
it's
fault.
It's not your fault. Yeah, it's he really takes
fault.
That to heart.
It's not your
I think
fault.
He does, yeah.
He's got a tattoo of Robin Williams just like on the inside of his arm, looks at it every now and again.
I think he does, yeah. I think that's the only explanation.
All right, let's move on to the number 206. And that's the number of days since Diego Costa's last competitive game. His deal at Atletico Madrid's gone through. Looks like he might be playing in the Copa del Rey tonight.
Yeah.
Could it finally be over? Is that going to kind of give Atletico a bit of a kick up the backside? Because I don't think they had the best start to the season. They're not losing, which is something we know that Diego Simeone's side don't do. But they certainly haven't been free scoring and roaring and never boring.
They are second in the league as it stands, but they are the lowest scorers in the top four. They've scored 25 goals altogether. That's 20 fewer than Barcelona. So I think Diego Costa coming in does add that dimension in attack if they've got any hope of overhauling the Catalans. You know, they're 9 points ahead now. They need someone like Costa there to bring the goals. It's an interesting situation. I think it's great for Atletico despite the transfer fee, which I think is 60-odd million. But yeah, you do have to question again Conte and Chelsea, because Conte himself says that, you know, Alvaro Morata is fatigued. He's struggling with the demands of constant non-stop football in the Premier League. Could they have done with Diego Costa in these 6 months before January? They still could have sold him then. Perhaps if Conte had handled the situation differently, he would have been able to integrate him in the squad. I mean, they're not doing too badly. They're still pushing Manchester United for putting the pressure on trophy, I think you should call it, as Spurs have won last year. Very, very prestigious honour. But
I think
it's
one thing putting the pressure on Leicester and another thing putting the pressure on Man City.
On Man City, yeah. All right. But you know, maybe they could have been slightly better off if Diego Costa had been in the squad. So you have to question Conte's management there, I think.
Yeah, it's really odd, because yesterday Conte said that David Luiz and Michy Batshuayi were free to leave in January. I mean, talk about not trusting your backup striker. Yeah. Michy Batshuayi is a decent player. All right, he's not Alvaro Morata, he's not Diego Costa. I mean, but he's a good player, and he has scored goals for Chelsea. He offers interesting movement. He offers something a little bit different. Mm. And letting David Luiz go, I mean, I find that very confusing.
He's another one he's fallen out with.
Yeah. Very odd. If I was Arsene Wenger, I'd be absolutely all over that, because Arsenal need a centre-back. He'd probably get him for cheap, and he's exactly the sort of character that Arsene Wenger loves. He's a bit troubled, a bit of a loose cannon, but Wenger's notoriously good with that sort of character. Acosta, £60 million. I think this is one of the most bonkers transfers I've seen in a long time. I get what Diego Simeone is trying to do. He knows they're a low scoring team because Griezmann's been a bit off the boil this season, because he's probably going to Barcelona next summer to join it with Coutinho.
And he's doing some great work on social media by all accounts.
He does some great work. great work. That was highly disappointing.
Happy Christmas, PR team.
Yeah, I know, right? Just pick a white basketball player. How hard,
just go to the
Larry Bird. Yeah. What are you doing? Sorry, that's throwing me right off. But I mean, Acosta over his career, 133 goals in 318 games, but similarly, 101 yellow cards. He's someone who gets frequently banned a lot. And he's also gotten away with murder in the Premier League. He's somehow never gotten a straight red card in the Premier League. There was a couple of retroactive bans, but he's the sort of player, like a bit like Luis Suarez. But with Suarez, he was scoring 35 goals a season. So you're like, well, I can accept him getting suspended for 8 games. Obviously, for different Diego Costa's getting suspended for different reasons to Luis Suarez, which we're not going to get into. But I just don't get it. Like, he's 29. He hasn't played in ages. Yeah. He's always a disruptive force. You know, he says initially he's happy, but he might get very like disappointed very quickly if he doesn't get the games that he wants. And Kevin Gamero is the starter again, so I don't get this from Atletico. I have to say, I think it's a bit of a waste of money.
They're obviously hoping he rediscovers that touch where he scored 27 goals in his final season at Atletico Madrid. But as Nick says, he's now 29. Is he really going to be able to do that?
Well, but just last season when Chelsea went on that run, that was, didn't that go on? They went on the 13-game streak, didn't they?
Yeah, Spurs ended.
And that was sort of inspired by Costa getting lots of 1-0 wins, wasn't it?
I have to say, I think Diego Costa, there's this thing, right, in the media where certain players' goals get reported more than other players' goals. Mm. And Diego Costa is one of those players that everyone seems to think he scores 25 goals a season, but he doesn't. He's only scored more than 20 goals in a single season once in his career. He's not, like, a monster goal scorer. He's got a goal-scoring average of less than 1 every 2 games. But because he's a hard man and he's a character and he's a bit of a bully, everyone seems to think that he's world-class. He's not.
Forget it.
A handful.
Put him on the scrap heap. Get rid of him. Who do you think is going to replace him? Because obviously, Batshuayi sort of replaced him. No, Morata sort of. Well, whatever. I mean, they're basically, if they're selling Batshuayi, they only have one left. So who's going there as the backup striker at Chelsea?
It's hard to see who they can sign in January. It's hard to see. I'm not even going to dignify that response. It's hard to see who they could sign in January, I think, to replace Batshuayi, which makes it rather confusing as to why Conte is so openly looking to sell him. It's common sense, surely, to try and drive up the fee, not just be like, you can have them, lads, for as cheap as you want.
Can I have Diafra Sacco for 15 million?
Do you want Diafra Sacco?
I
can't think if they're going to do better than Batshuayi, to be honest, as a backup striker. Alvaro Morata's brilliant, right? He's refuted all the naysayers. I mean, what does Conte want? That's kind of what I don't get here. Does he want another Morata? It's not going to happen, mate.
Crouchy?
I mean, Giroud?
That's the thing. They probably look for someone in the summer, surely, to bring in. They've been linked with Dries Mertens before from Napoli. Does that bring us on to the next point?
It does.
Yes.
Wow.
Just making your job easy for you. Yeah, don't worry about it.
You should get the hosting gig here.
Solid.
The next number, which is 13, the number of times in the last 14 seasons the team leading Serie A after 19 games has won the title. Napoli are up there at the top at the moment, but the only team that hasn't won it after 19 games and being on top is Napoli.
Wow.
So is it going to happen again? Went out of the Coppa Italia on Tuesday night. But, I mean, really, the Scudetto is the title for the aim for them this season. People are giving them plaudits all over the place. They're playing great football under Sarri. Are they going to do it again? They're going to go to the glory days down in Naples.
I'm tempted to say this is a different team than the one that set the unwanted stat you sort of set out there. They've been fantastic in 2017. They got the second best goal difference in Serie A with 29. It's the fewest goals conceded from open play in Serie A. Only one defeat in their first 19 games. So they've been very impressive. I think they've certainly been one of the most enjoyable teams to watch, as one of the most formidable as well. Their star players are on fire. Dries Mertens, as I mentioned there, 10 goals and 6 assists. Marek Hamšík as well, who just became the club's all-time leading goal scorer, ahead of some guy called Maradona. But, and I mean, as you say, it's the in Italy, they're called the Winter Champions if you're top at Christmas. 68% of the teams who have led Serie A at the midway stage have gone on to win it. 10 of the last 11 Serie A winners were Winter Champions too, apart from, of course, Napoli in 2015. The thing is, they're only a single point ahead of Juventus, who've been resurgent in the first half of the season. it's hard. My heart says Napoli, of course, but the head says Juventus because of the resources they've got. Obviously, they've got Gonzalo Higuain, who was the man who sort of fired Napoli to that title challenge a couple of years ago. And they've got Paulo Dybala as well, who, you know, they've managed to rotate. He hasn't started a game since the 1st of December when they beat Napoli. He came off the bench last week to score two against Verona to get them a win there. So I think they've got the depth that Napoli don't have. Napoli have a fantastic starting team. But can they add someone in January? Can they add depth to their squad there? Maybe that will make the difference. But as it stands, you put your money on Juventus, surely. Is it a sixth successive Scudetto they're going for now?
Yeah.
Which seems ridiculous.
Six successive.
Sort of like to check that every time I say it. But
what kind of money do they have?
Not a huge amount. That's the thing. Yeah. And this is probably the last year that Napoli have those key talents all together. Koulibaly, Insigne, Mertens, Hamsik. This is probably the last year that they can cash in on some of them because Mertens is 30. Hamsik, I think, is 28 now. Insigne's getting to his peak.
Hamsik's only 28.
Yeah, he's not. He's just been at Napoli for absolutely ages.
God,
So it's probably the last year that this group have got together. And I think I totally agree with Adam's point. The problem is squad depth. You saw they rotated a bit against Atalanta, but still started Hamsik and Mertens, and they looked leggy against Atalanta. They looked absolutely knackered, and they lost. Atalanta, really energetic team, caused a lot of problems, as we saw against Everton. And I can see Juventus just turning the screw, just doing exactly what Man United used to do in the late 90s, early noughties, when they were in charge of a title challenge, just turn the screw and just make it impossible for other teams to get back into the title race.
When's the winter break, though? Are they just at it?
They've been playing throughout December. So I think it's now.
It's the first time the Serie A hasn't had a winter break.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't have one at all. It
doesn't have one at all for the first time in, I think, 50 years or something.
It'd be interesting to see how that affects it, yeah.
Yeah. So, exactly. It really doesn't play into Napoli's hands.
Depressing, yeah. Like I say, you want to say Napoli are going to win it, don't you?
Yeah.
And like we were saying, they're a better team than they were 2 years ago. But I think the odds are stacked against them in a way.
Yeah. I reckon Juventus are bringing anyone in just to extra resource.
Not sure they need anyone. Apparently, they're trying to sign Emre Can.
Oh, Emre Can, yeah. They're saying it's good as done, aren't they?
Yeah, but I mean, he won't go until the summer, right? Yeah. I wouldn't say they necessarily need anyone to compete in Serie A. I think you would put your money on them. And, you know, maybe they need someone to beat Spurs in the Champions League. They need a little bit of strength. Don't they?
That is going to be a hell of a game.
They're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1-0, Juventus.
Yeah.
Spurs.
Over the two legs. Goal scored in the fifth minute of the first leg. All right, let's move on to I'm Embarrassed to Ask.
I'm Embarrassed to Ask.
So, Leicester had a debutante, just like you, Nick, today. You're a debutante.
I'm a debutante,
You have so much in common with Adrian Silva.
So much.
For Leicester. He came on against Huddersfield, despite the fact that I think he signed for him 6 months ago. Not 6 months, 4 months ago, whatever it was, at the end of the transfer window. But he's been trained with them. He's not been in... I think he came from Sporting Club de Portugal.
Yes.
Is what you got to call him, not Sporting Lisbon.
Not Sporting Lisbon, no. Or Sporting CP if you're down with the kids.
Exactly, yeah, that's the lingo. If you're going to tag it up a wall somewhere with graffiti paint, spray paint, whatever they call it, the kids. The kids out there. What am I talking about? Okay, yeah, Adrian Silva, yeah.
Yeah,
so basically, they signed him like 4 months ago, didn't they?
Yeah.
But he's been training.
Yes.
But he's not playing.
Yes.
What happened?
So,
talk to me.
So basically when you finalise a transfer, there's this very strange sort of semi-fact, sort of online weird CMS system, like content management system, which FIFA used to basically register transfers. And Leicester did it 14 seconds late. That was it. They were 14 seconds late. But the great
got sacked for that.
Everyone was really annoyed about it because Adrian Silva was brought in to replace Danny Drinkwater. Now, Claude Puel has come in after Craig Shakespeare and actually done a really good job of just getting Leicester back to basics. Jamie Vardy's form hasn't suffered without Danny Drinkwater. But now Adrian Silva's here. He's a really accomplished passer of the ball. He'll be a great partner.
God, you are going Dutch, aren't you?
A passer of the ball. Yeah, I do that sometimes. And he's a good foil for Ndidi. And what I love most about him is that his usual 23 shirt number wasn't available. So what shirt number did he go for? 14, which was the number of seconds the transfer was delayed by, which is one of my favourite things ever.
Spiteful. So good. Squad numbering.
So good.
Oh, that's nice.
But what do you know about Man Like Silver?
Probably about as much as you, Rob. Which is the same
and, that's, and that's why they brought you on.
No, I think, as Nick said, I think he's, you know, obviously it's a pretty catastrophic error not to have him in that first half of the season. Obviously they've survived without him. 14 seconds, hard to swallow, I'm sure, for Leicester. But now he's here in the second half of the season. Claude Puel has improved them so much and turned them into a really formidable side that, you know, it can only be a huge bonus for them to have him now in that second half of the season.
I'm reading here that he's a bit of a penalty specialist. Is he the Portuguese Mark Noble?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
is that what they call him in Portugal?
25 out of 29 ain't bad, but I think Vardy, it'll be difficult to take the pens off Vardy, to be honest.
El Noblo.
Is that what they call him? Right, incredible.
I'll tell you what, Brad, you know Brad Guzan? Yeah, we all know Brad Guzan. This is
Brad
a total tangent.
Brad.
I'm going to text him straight after this.
Brad Guzan, right, get him on the blower. He used to play for Chivas USA when the MLS just started, and obviously that's a team with like a very large like sort of American Hispanic following. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Bimbo is a sponsor.
Yeah. And
which is bread.
More knowledge.
Brad Guzan's nickname was El Guzano.
Oh, God. Imaginative, I love it.
El Noblo and El Guzano, get them in the same team. And what a team it would be. Right, let's move on to probably what everyone's saying at the moment. Who's this fella? It's El Noblo. No, it's El Guzano.
Who's this fella?
Everton have been dipping their toes in the market already. Aladici has gone for El Tosuno slash El Chenko slash Cenk Tosun.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
Talk to me about this geezer. So he's from Beşiktaş. 25 million euros. I've got... I'm doing a very small amount on my hands here. This is... I've got my thumb and forefinger. This is how much knowledge I've got about Cenk Tosun.
Let me reel off some stats from the paper in front of me, Rob. See if you're impressed. 41 goals in 96 league games for Beşiktaş. Yeah?
I'm impressed.
4 goals and 2 assists in the Champions League 2017-18 group stage.
Wow.
Okay, that's like 8 goals and 1 assist in 16 appearances in the Turkish Super League this season.
He deserves a medal.
I think he's a good striker. I think, obviously, you know, this is something that, you know, many people have pointed out over the summer. Everton didn't play Romelu Lukaku. They put all of their eggs in the Giroud basket. It didn't work out for Ronald Koeman. They need reinforcements up front. That's something Koeman and now Allardyce have sort of echoed. Now he's at Everton. It does feel like Steve Walsh's job is resting on this transfer. He was brought in from Leicester to oversee the transfer strategy at Everton after signing players like Riyad Mahrez at Leicester. I think...
And Danny Simpson.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say the results were mixed in the summer for Everton. Not signing a striker, obviously a huge oversight. But Tosun, I think, is a decent striker. He's got 20 goals in 33 league games last season. That was his sort of breakthrough season at Beşiktaş. I think he has all the ingredients to be a success in the Premier League. I think Steve Walsh is going to have his fingers crossed that it does work out.
What happened to that Spanish geezer that Everton signed?
Sandro.
Yeah. Sandro Ramirez. He's just not very good. Basically, he never was that good. He's not scored many goals, and they took a wild punt on him.
There's only $5 million there. So.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
just the most
they needed a striker, so they got a striker. He doesn't fit the system at all. I live in northeast London, and the heavily Turkish,
the richest, nicest part. I've got a huge.
You've not
house,
heard my voice. heavily Turkish area, and I'll tell you what, my barber is really unhappy about this. He's livid.
What, that he's really leaving Beşiktaş?
That Cenk Tosun is even being linked away. He was.
I rate him that highly.
He was doing my short back and sides, 5 on the sides, a bit longer on top. Thanks for asking. Yeah. And he was like, "Do you know Cenk Tosun?" he's furious.
Yeah,
he's absolutely livid because he's not only their talisman. He does everything for them. He wins the ball in the air.
Right.
He holds it up brilliantly. He's really, really technical. He's a great finisher. He's basically the only reason they've qualified for the last 16 in the Champions League. Beşiktaş, like, the fans are absolutely crazy, right? They're known for having this absolutely crazy fan base. They're so passionate. And they're looking forward to this last 16 game against Bayern Munich. And now they really thought they had a chance. They really, really did think they have a chance. And without Cenk Tosun, though, they're a shadow of the team. that they are. He's been absolutely electric for them. Turkish strikers in the Premier League, not a great record in the past.
Not a storied history. Yeah.
Not a storied history, but I mean, I'd really like to see him at Everton, especially, you know, playing alongside someone like Wayne Rooney, who can be like, look, this is how things work in the Premier League. This is what the runs you need to make. And he could be
In his best Turkish.
His best Turkish, of course.
Wayne, a man of a real lingua glot. Wayne Rooney.
Is that a word?
Yeah, sorry, no, it's like...
Polyglot.
It's so smart, Rob.
Polyglot,
isn't it? I didn't realise.
Is it?
Polyglot.
Yeah, polyglot. Yeah, I knew it.
Linga glots.
I thought it was linga glot.
That's like from Harry Potter.
It's polyglot.
Well, there you go. Defending in words, everybody. I'm more interested in your barber. I was just distracted.
Yeah.
When you told him about that, did he you know the stick?
Didn't tell him. He told me, which is why when you know we're doing who's this fella, Sanctosin, I'm like, oh my god, Hass is going to be livid about this.
Are you going to hit up Hass when we get out?
Yeah, definitely.
If I need some Turkish football knowledge, mate, I'm going to this bar.
Do it. Yeah. How aggressively did he burn the hair out of your ears?
Really
aggressively. Did he leave it in there?
I think it's a really good move. Yeah, just get stick it in there. Really go for it.
All right, then. Let's move on to Stats Showdown, where we're going to talk about haircuts a little bit more. Stats Showdown. All right, then. Crunch time, or clutch, as I believe the kids talk. Is that what they say?
Yeah, in America.
Clutch?
Maybe.
Is that a thing?
In
the States.
Clutch.
Yeah.
Clutch moments.
There we go. Let's get that trending on Bebo. I'm not even old. I don't know why I'm pretending to be an old man.
What's
I think Bebo? It's a chair.
I've never heard of it.
I'm in a very relaxed chair.
All right, yeah. Makes
gives
sense.
Me a sort of feeling of seniority.
Misplaced.
Let's talk about some stats, shall we?
Yeah, let's.
Of course, this isn't defending in seniority. Nick, you're a debutant.
Yep.
Best 2 out of 3.
Right.
In a competition to impress me with impress me stats.
Yeah.
Kind of flirty stats. I can go up to someone, some random bloke who's watching football at the bar and be like, hey, do you know what? Tuncay Senli is the most successful Turkish striker in Premier League history. Is he? Maybe.
For now, until Elchenko takes over.
Elchenko / El Tucano takes over.
The legend.
So given that you're here, and it's your first time.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you the first go.
I appreciate that, and I've been listening to previous episodes of Defending a Number, so I've gotten a bit of the lay of the land of the sort of stat that you
on
like.
On Deezer, by the way.
Yeah,
you can
on
go
Deezer.
Download the app. Loved it. Or Deezer.com.
So obviously, it was tempting to go really, really statty because I used to work for Squawker and really like you know get the expected goals, expected assists, something like that. Oh, but I found something I think you like. It's about Napoli. We were talking about them earlier.
Ooh.
So Hamsik broke the record for the highest scoring Napoli player of all time.
So happy for him.
Right. Incredible coincidences, though, with his goal against Crotone. It was his 117th goal for Napoli, scored in the 17th minute of the match, which was the last game of 2017. Hamzik's shirt number is number 17. But what sort of puts a bow on it is that 17 is an unlucky number in Italy.
Boom.
I mean, I'm not sure of the relevance of the unlucky number bit, but
it's just more 17s.
I like just lots of 17s.
Yeah. Hamsik after the game declared 17 is no longer an unlucky number.
Is that a national thing?
It's a national thing in Italy. 17 is an unlucky number.
Right, but not anymore because Hamsik came along.
I don't know. We're waiting for the government to sign the documents.
A Slovakian man came to Naples and said, "Fear not the number 17. For I am Hamsik, and I have annulled it."
There's an opening here for me to get a point here, to shoot that down.
There's always an opening.
All right. Basically, I may have only got one good stat, and I may have forgotten about the other two, and I may have researched it on the tube on the way over. I may have done that. I don't know.
This is why we pay you the big bucks.
So let me blow your mind, Rob. When you're going up to your mate in the pub, as you said there.
He's not a mate. I'm flirting with him.
Oh, sorry. When you're flirting with that bloke in the pub and he's like, "Oh, Roy Hodgson's rubbish, blah, blah, blah." You can say to him that under Roy Hodgson, Crystal Palace, Rob, Crystal Palace have won 11 points from losing positions so far this season, Rob. Only Everton have won more. Hodgson, genius, football legend.
I'm exhausted just listening to him.
That's fair. I do struggle with this section, Rob. You know this. I've got a good one coming up. That's all I'll say.
Struggle with most of them.
Yeah.
You haven't won that point.
Have I not?
No.
Was it really that much worse that the coincidences over it?
Yeah, think of the fun.
No, you're right.
Think of the fun we had with the number 17.
I tried to put it down.
You've given me Roy Hodgson and some points that aren't as good as Everton.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I thought it was going to be they've won the most points from losing positions, but as I read it, I was like, oh, actually.
As you scroll down Opta's Twitter.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Mate, that's why they pay me the big bucks.
All right, then. This is your go again. Go and scroll down to the next tweet.
All right, this one I'm going to make
try and miss out the bit where they go class at the end.
We were talking about Virgil van Dijk earlier, and you know, I was thinking, obviously, good with the ball at his feet, passing and all that. And I was thinking, who's got the best pass accuracy in the Premier League? Do you know who it is, Rob?
A defender.
It's John Stones with 96.5% pass accuracy, which seems very high. He's made 919 passes, which means he's only misplaced 33 passes this season.
That's not a lot of passes.
It's not a lot of passes, but...
not a lot of passes is how you sum up that.
I feel like, you know, we were trying to reassure Boltwood earlier. Doors are made to be opened. You know,
doors are wide open.
It's not a door if it's shut forever, but I feel like...
doors have been blown open for Nick yet.
I feel like Bolton may have turned a shut door into a wall.
Okay.
Well, I don't know, actually. I don't know, because I wanted to do an FA Cup stat, because it's FA Cup weekend this weekend, and it's going to be awful, because there's been so many games of the Christmas period that all the Premier League teams are going to rotate. But I found something quite interesting, which is that... So Arsene Wenger, after he won the FA Cup last season, has won the FA Cup more than any other manager. He overtook a guy called George Ramsey, who is manager of Aston Villa, who's got six. What's my stat is that the similarities between the two are really, really weird. So basically, George Ramsey was in charge of Villa for 42 years.
More coincidence.
42 years, right? He controlled everything to do with the club. Like he was basically a tyrant, right? Bit Wenger-like. He was hugely successful initially. He won six First Division titles before going on a 17-year barren run. 17 years!
Incredible.
During which he only won the FA Cup, which is exactly what Arsene Wenger's done.
Rob, tell me honestly.
Aston Villa didn't win another title for 72 years. That's what Arsenal fans have got to look forward to.
It is.
Incredible. Are you really going to go up to your flirty mate in the pub and tell him that? Or are you going to tell him that John Stones...
I can't even remember what you told me.
33 passes, he's only missed...
Oh, well, John Stones, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
96.5. And if I'm flirting with this geezer in the pub, who's watching football by himself, and I just ruin his day.
Yeah.
And I just say, hey, guess what? Man City's centre-back passes more than anyone.
Yeah.
He'll probably say, obviously.
Not more than everyone. He's got the best pass accuracy, Rob. I feel like
Rob looks so disappointed in us.
Because I'd argue yours wasn't necessarily a stat, it was a story.
That's what I was worried about.
And then, so obviously you give me it to me, and I blow you away with this last stat.
Yours was...
mediocre at best.
Yeah. No.
As if I got it on the chain.
I like Nick's storytelling.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me try and get some dignity back with one.
Two-nil
down. 2-0 down, Nick. Pounce on him, make it 3-0, give him a whitewash.
Well, like Adam, I've saved my best till last. and it's a total pandering stat as well.
No.
Put your hands.
Anthony Knockhart of Brighton and Hove Albion scored the first goal of the new Premier League calendar year. Right, first goal of 2018. Mm-hmm. He is the first player from a Premier League debutant club to do it since West Ham's Tim Breaker did it versus Everton in 1994.
Okay.
Pandering.
It's pandering.
You remember Tim Breaker?
My stat's the opposite of pandering. You ready?
Oh, you cut me down.
I'm going to get some dignity back here. So, yeah, as you know, Rob, I love Harry Kane more than my own nan.
And that is Boltwood's only ever successful tweet.
That's true. He broke the record for Premier League goals scored, as you know, in a calendar year with 39. That included six Premier League hat-tricks, as many as every other player in the top flight have managed between them this season. That's not the best bit, Rob. In total, his career Premier League hat-tricks are now 8, which is more than West Ham have ever managed in the Premier League as a club. They've only managed 6 Premier League hat-tricks as a club. 8. That's a great... Harry Kane has scored more hat-tricks than West Ham.
Of course he has.
And Southampton and Sunderland and West Brom and Leicester and Bournemouth. But I thought he'd enjoy the West Ham bit more.
I mean, who have we had? Andy Carroll...
Tony Coyle.
Marlon Harewood. Wood?
Six hat-tricks in total. six. That's it in the Premier League.
Yeah, no, we're always rubbish. It's not surprising.
Well, I thought it was
except when Tim Breaker scored in 1994 versus Everton.
He's pandering. He's pandering over it.
Don't let couldn't that be pandering
you.
More.
Don't let that sway you, Rob. Don't let that sway you. Harry Kane, West Ham. He scored more. It's incredible. Unbelievable.
That is ridiculous, to be fair.
Yeah, it's even ridiculous.
It is probably slightly more interesting than the one
really...
goal in 1994.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm going to give you it.
Yes.
Reluctantly, and I don't really know why. But
Harry Kane has scored more hat-tricks than a club in the Premier League. Incredible.
Yeah, obviously. Because we're always rubbish.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
If you play for a good team, you're going to get more chances than a rubbish team is going to get over 5 years, right?
I don't think you're appreciating this stat, Rob. You're not appreciating it correctly.
He is ridiculous. I actually held back from... I had another Harry Kane stat, but I didn't think it was good enough. But it's just ridiculous. He's just the funnest player to research ever because he's scored so many
he's
goals.
He's better than West Ham, Rob. By himself.
No player is bigger than the club, especially if they don't even play for your club.
Yeah, you're right, actually, sorry.
And that's my final opinion on all this Harry Kane loving.
Sorry.
Where's your Arnautovic stats? What about Carroll?
Who cares, mate?
He was great. He scored, great the other day.
He was
efficient.
He did what Carroll does, basically.
He was kind of not playing football for 88 minutes and then scored a header and a last-minute tap-in. But
what a man.
All right, then. Well, Nick, you're the winner.
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
And if people want to find you on the internet for an onslaught of football statistics and opinion...
Mm.
Where can they find you?
At Nick W. English. Yeah. It's intermittent tweeting, mostly about Arsenal, if I'm honest. But yeah, you can find me there.
And Boltwood, if people want to find you in an onslaught of shameless self-promotion on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me at Adam Boltwood on Twitter or the Front 3 Football Podcast. Great podcast.
And you can find me at Rob Armstrong _ WH on Twitter. And of course, you can find this podcast, Defending in Numbers, on Deezer, where you can also find other football podcasts, live Premier League commentary, ooh, and even football playlists.
Wow.
Download the Deezer app or visit Deezer.com. And we'll see you next week on Defending in Numbers.
Defending in Numbers is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.